Silence!
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Pride Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to let's try again. Okay. Edit that out. Start over. And welcome to episode 53 of Nerd Pride Radio. 53, that's Herbie the Love Bug's racing number, and also the presumed age of the Grinch in How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Why, for 53 years I've put up with it now. I must stop Christmas from coming. But how? So ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus there's like seven other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You're listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. Our sponsor this week is Funky Cold Medina. Yeah, whenever your misogyny needs need to be absolutely unironic, pop open an ice-cold Funky Cold Medina. Your bitches will thank you. Whew. All right. First on the agenda, before we get to the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast, I have... That's right, just a little bit of feedback. All right. Actually, first thing is I got a new listener. Woo! Or at least, okay, a new listener who's willing to talk to me and come over and be my friend, just like I keep asking you guys to do every single week when I record this thing. I am so desperate and lonely. Come talk to me. Anyway, Ronster is our new listener. Welcome, Ron. And said some very nice stuff and also added a bunch of stuff to the Podomatic. So he's cooler than you. But also on top of that, I have an email from Billy Bob. Billy Bob first says some nice stuff, blah, 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 blah. Here's the relevant section. He says, "You said it'd be nice to have a scale available for a before and after weight when you, quote, do your business. And then you added, if I had a scale at work, as an afterthought. So does this mean that you only poop at work? That's weird." Oh, all right, no, it doesn't, no. I don't just poop at work, but I do often, I suppose. Is that gross? Look, here's the deal. I take, I've got a bunch of medications for my blood pressure and my cholesterol and all that, and it keeps me very, very healthy. And just the way my eating habits go, and I take my Metamucil first thing in the morning, and, you know, I would love to be able to get up, do my business right off when I wake up in the morning, and then just get right in the shower, have a clean, fresh start for your whole day, everything's wonderful. But unfortunately, my body doesn't do that. So usually it waits till about 10 o'clock. And so, you know, hey, at least I'm getting paid for doing it. Does that help? All right. Also, and that was going to be the only feedback I was bringing up, is just new listener and then my poop. But then apparently I got a lot of crap about, well, I wouldn't say crap, but I got a lot of input, helpful suggestions on the throwing cats out of windows for science from last episode 52. And Akiva says, "Wow, I can't believe you didn't use the word defenestration." Yeah, I know. And like I explained to him, I actually originally titled episode 52, the original title was Feline Defenestration. That was going to be my title. I had it on my notes. It was the working title all the way through. And then at the very last minute, I sold out my artistic integrity for the sake of extra downloads. Is that bad of me? Because here's the deal. If I title an episode Racism, Sexism, and Pathfinder Evil, that will get a lot more downloads and attention than if I title something Feline Defenestration. All right. That's just the way it goes. And now this is not the same thing as me titling it, you know, six bizarre things you never knew about. Okay. I'm not doing that. All right. I mean, quite literally, I had the bulk of the show. 30 minutes of that show was devoted to racism, sexism, and the nature of Pathfinder evil. All right. It was nice and honest, but it's the kind of thing that I know will get more hits. You know what my most popular episode is? Can anyone guess? Out of the 53 I've done so far, well, 52 that have been released, the one that has gotten the absolute most downloads out of all of them. Number 6, Disney Princesses. You know why? Because people do Google searches for Disney Princesses. People do iTunes searches for Disney Princesses. Therefore, they often see my podcast as part of the search results. And so I get a lot of downloads on that one. My favorite title for any... and by the way, if anyone has done a search for Disney Princesses and they wind up listening to my podcast as a result of it, it's not like episode 6 doesn't pay off. I mean, episode 6 is, you know, a good 45 minutes about Disney Princesses. I think I give them their money's worth on that one. You know, it's not deceptive. It just, but it is the idea that, yeah, Feline Defenestration would have been the better title, and I wish I'd gone with it. But then, you know, at the last minute, I'm a sellout. That's what I do. No, my favorite title of any of the episodes I've ever had, Chimp with a Katana. Oh, I love Chimp with a Katana. That's just a great title. And you know how many that gets in comparison to, say, Disney Princesses? Yeah, it's like 10%, less than 10% of the downloads of Disney Princesses. You know why? Because Chimp with a Katana is not a phrase that you search for. It's a phrase that if you see it in the list of available podcasts, like if it's coming up on the RPG podcast feed or something like that, and you see Chimp with a Katana, oh, that'll grab your eye. But it's not something anyone actually goes out actively searching for. Well, you guys probably will now. But in general, it's just not something you normally look for. So anyway, that's where I went with Defenestration. Sorry, Akiva, I didn't mean to go off on a tangent about that. But then I get to work, and Joel says, wow, you did a whole thing on throwing cats out of windows, and you want to set up a test for it, and you never once used the word catapult? Oh, God darn it, he's right. I should have said catapult. Crap. And then, as we're explaining the whole design of it to Yancey and the idea of testing, you know, throwing cats out of windows, he says, well, yeah, well, if you wanted controls for that, wouldn't it be better off to have controls of throwing other animals out of windows and making comparisons? I'm like, oh, God, it totally would. And I said, you know what the best animal for that would be? Oh, rats. Well, because they suggested manatee, dogs, things like this. And I'm like, no, throw rats out the window. You know why? Because I think rats will have because they're smaller, they would, they've got more surface area to weight ratio. They would have a lower, terminal velocity. I think rats would have a huge survivability rate if you threw them out of, you know, like a 50 story window. That would just creep people out. Imagine being able to demonstrate on film that you just threw a rat out of a 50 story window and it hits the ground and literally hits the ground, looks at you as if to ask what the hell you just did that for, and then just runs off like nothing ever happened. All right? That would creep a dude out. That nothing hurts him. All right? That would be cool. And if we were going to do rats, we could certainly employ a ratapult. Is that going too far?
Go.
All right. You know what? Also, I just realized that's maybe the 12th time in the 8 minutes of this podcast that I've asked for your approval. Apparently, I'm very needy. I'm going to stop doing that because you know what? I don't care what you think. All right. Was that too harsh? Was that too much? Probably. Sorry. Onto the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I add it to my master list, and then the best stuff off that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. So, what's first on my master list? Well, if I had my master list in front of me, I'd be able to tell you that it's, oh, here it is.
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die.
My gaming table. That's right. Role-playing games, video games, card games. If it fits on my gaming table, then I am here to share it with you. I told myself after the last two episodes I wasn't going to do Pathfinder again. I know, you know what? I need to chill, take a little break from it. But I can't help it. I'm having so much fun playing Pathfinder. We just finished up the last... Oh, hold on. Phone. IS&T, this is Mike. Shoot. See, I answered the phone and I kept you guys on for a little bit because I was really hoping it would be a telemarketer or something. But it wasn't. It was someone who actually needed my help. So that's why I paused. Sorry about that. All right. Anyway, we just finished up the game Cost of Magic, which, oh, darn it. See, now I'm just going to be making a huge to-do list here while we're working. I need to go over to the Cost of Magic to the forums because we're polishing up the last of it, and it sounds like people are doing drastic stuff without me. I put in my first post right after the game was over, and then I completely forgot about it until I saw Stan's post this morning. I've got to go back and help finish that thing up if it's not already done without me. But anyway, it wound up really, really awesome, and we wound up in a player-on-player battle. We got to take one of our cohorts out, and then I think we've made up with him. I hope so. But had a great time. We successfully completed our mission, found out that not everything's as it seems. It was really awesome. So we had a good time. But also that means, see, another thing for my to-do list. I should have a pencil here. Is that, after this one, I said I'd be running Zombie Cinema, which means I need to grab all my Zombie Cinema stuff so I can actually post that material online so that we're ready to play that one next Thursday. That's only a week from now. So I gotta get all that stuff set up, get the board scanned in, put it onto Roll 20. Oh man, I got a lot to do. But that's not what I'm here to talk about. What I'm here to talk about is, I played a couple times with my kids this week for Pathfinder, and I took my own advice on evil to heart from the last episode. They're running a group that consists of, a goblin, a kobold, an elf, and a half-orc. So they are already a pretty mixed bag. And the elf happened to be raised by halflings, so we've got a weird situation that goes on with that one. So we've got this very weird multicultural mix in the group. And they've escaped from slavery, and they're now stuck in a swamp. And I know that there's going to be goblins around here, and I know there's going to be kobolds around here. And that actually plays right into the membership of the group. And so I played against expectations and tried to give some depth to the culture around here. And I've created goblins and kobolds who do not like each other, and they're kind of at odds, but not any kind of open hostility. They just don't care for each other. And the kids played into it really, really well. They had a confrontation where they were basically being accosted by goblins who were basically brigands, highwaymen looking to steal their stuff. And they decided to talk their way out of it. They paid off the bandits because the bandits they're goblins who live very poor in a swamp, for goodness sake. And they wound up negotiating a price, and they settled with them that said, look, we're not going to give you all of our stuff, but, you know, look at us. We're pretty wealthy. We have a lot of really fancy equipment. We could probably take you out, but how about look, if you're in need, we'll give you 5 or 6 gold. How's that? And the goblins were thrilled. That was way more money than they were expecting. Way more money than they've ever seen. And so here are the guys out of their minor dragon hoard that they have in their bag. They hand out 6 gold. Crisis averted. They go back to the goblins' town, village, whatever it is. They actually wind up, the goblin in the group is a bard, so he winds up performing for them all night. They throw a huge party. Everyone had a great time. I mean, they really got into the whole party scene and had a lot of fun. And so then, next, we wind up having them run across on their way out because the kobold wants to go find the kobold village because she wants to see her people again. She knows these aren't her people, but it would be nice to see a scaly face for once. And so as they're headed out this way, they run across a group of halflings. Halflings mounted on these big old swamp cats. And the halflings, one of them, two of them are paladins, one's a sorcerer. These are very noble, good aligned halflings who happen to have some kobold prisoners with them. And so we have a confrontation, and hey, what's with the prisoners? Oh, hey, these are lawbreakers, criminals that, and essentially, the halflings get all uppity and racist because you've got a and the goblin. See, I should actually plan these things out so I can explain them a little better. Before they met up, the goblin had disguised himself as a halfling. He just used a disguise self spell. So he actually looked like a halfling, but they've got a kobold with them in their group. And the halflings got all racist and uppity about it and started making some demands of them. And because all the kobolds in this area are criminals, and therefore we've captured these and we're bringing them in, blah, blah, blah. And, the guys didn't like their tone, so they took them on. It turned to fisticuffs pretty quick, and actually, the sorcerer on our side wound up frying their whole group with a fireball, and, the rest of the halflings ran away. They freed the prisoners. Now they're gonna head back to the kobold village, where I'm sure there will be more rejoicing and celebration. Although we'll see. I think I'm gonna make the kobolds a little more suspicious. But it was the kind of thing, the whole point of it was, again, taking my own advice about evil and culture and fleshing them out as real people. I created a situation where the goblins are, you know, mostly on the shady side, but that, you know, that's how their culture is set up. They live on the fringes. They live out in the swamp. They, you know, they make their living raiding and thieving. That's just where they get their resources from a lot of the time. And the group played into that and figured, okay, well, if you guys are in need, let's pay you off and let's go. And then they wound up having a great time. The halflings came along being good, a little, you know, a little snotty about it, a little self-righteous, but the halflings were good characters with a paladin in their midst. And they were doing what they believed was law abiding and right. But it wound up being in conflict with the character's group. And so they wound up taking them on and not because the group is evil, although one of them is, but that's not the whole point. Not because they're evil, but because their interests were in conflict, which I loved. I thought it was wonderful. And all the participants had a great time. It was heartwarming because it was one of those that, I mean, literally, the minute we got done playing, we had this whole thing with the Goblin Village and then this whole thing with the kobold confrontation. And the minute we got done playing, the two littlest ones could not stop talking about it. I mean, it was their bedtime. They had to get going and they could not stop talking about it until we finally just shut up and go to sleep. It's done. We'll talk in the morning. They were so excited. So we did something right. We had a great time. And now, you know, hey, look, this was just a minor halfling party. Now we have the option of, oh, there's going to be trouble in the woods. All right. Well, now they're going to send out the big guns from their law enforcement, and we'll see how they handle that. So this is going to be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to it. Pathfinder is awesome, guys. If you're not playing Pathfinder all the time, you're not doing it right. Oh man, get on it. But again, enough of Pathfinder. Enough. I have prattled on too much. I could keep going, obviously, forever on this. Let's move on to something different. You know what I got now? Roku! Yeah. I have been watching so much streaming television lately, as I always am. And here's what I've got. All right, Orphan Black. I have not yet purchased season 2. I'm thinking of buying a season pass. It's only $9 or $9.99, whatever it is. I think I'm just going to buy a season pass to season 2. But we'll see. But in the meantime, episode 1 is already available streaming. That's how they're going to hook me in, is I'm going to watch episode. And that's why I haven't actually watched it, is I've never done a season pass of anything. I've never paid for a TV show. Everybody I know has, but I've just never done it. And I know that if I watch the first episode of season 2, I know that I'll be hooked. And then right after I watch it, that's when I'm going to have to buy the rest of the season and go through it. So I haven't quite gotten to that one yet. But I did finish all of Rick and Morty. So the whole first season was, I think, 11 episodes, and I've caught all of those. And still, right up through the last moment of the last episode, I love everything about Rick and Morty. If you guys are not watching it, go watch. Just go to Cartoon Network. Go to AdultSwim.com. Go get it on YouTube. Watch Rick and Morty. It's worth your time. It's great stuff. And then John Oliver's got his new show on HBO. John Oliver's Last Week Tonight. And I don't have HBO, but they do offer the first episode completely free, plus a whole bunch of bonus material and downloads and stuff. And all of that's on YouTube. you can find that. And I'm hoping and praying that they'll keep offering more John Oliver Last Week Tonight stuff for free. I would love to see the full episodes keep coming, but I'm sure that's way too much to ask. But John Oliver's Last Week Tonight was just awesome. It was a lot of fun. I mean, look, are you a fan of The Daily Show? If you enjoy The Daily Show to any degree, then you will probably like John Oliver. This is Last Week Tonight is not that different from The Daily Show. It is him, John Oliver, sitting at a desk doing commentary on the week's news in a comic style, very much a Jon Stewart Daily Show style. But because it's on HBO, there are no commercial breaks, and he does not have any correspondence, and his interview was literally only 3 minutes long, so it is all him doing his monologue from the desk. It's all just him doing the presentation. That's my favorite part of The Daily Show, is just that first 10 minutes of the show. All right, did you see John Oliver do The Daily Show over the summer? He was the host while John was away making a movie. John Stewart, well, John Oliver. I just realized they're both named John. Anyway, Oliver was the host over the summer while Stewart was out making a movie somewhere, and he was brilliant. And this is more of the same. And I really enjoy the show. I highly recommend it. I've been listening to John Oliver on his podcast for ages, and he's just funny, just really smart and really funny. So I recommend that one. And then last of all, oh holy crap! Season 7 of 30 Rock is on Roku? Oh, man, it's probably been there for months. I had no idea. I just happened to be flipping through, and I'm like, whoa. New episodes, really? So I'm now halfway through Season 7 of 30 Rock, and another show that I have just always loved, beginning to end. Always have a great time watching that one. So I've been getting some really good TV, and I'm really happy about it. This is awesome stuff. My next step is as soon as the next paycheck comes in, my wife and I are going out and, well, not going out. We're probably just going to order it on Amazon. Going to get ourselves a smart TV. And for a couple $100, whatever it is, we wind up getting a smart TV. And that'll be, I think, the final nail in the coffin for getting rid of cable. Because I am ready to ditch cable now. I don't need it for nothing. You guys hear me. When I talk about TV, am I talking about anything on network TV? Am I talking about anything on cable? No, I'm talking, well, I guess technically they are, but that's not where I watch any of them. I watch everything. On Netflix, on Amazon, on Hulu, on YouTube. Everything's available for me. Everything that I want. I've got so much stuff. I have got stockpiles of material that I'll never ever have time to get to. If I have that much backlog of material, what do I need cable for? So, getting the smart TV is going to be, don't tell her. But this is going to be the next step in convincing her that we really don't need cable. I mean, she agrees with me that we don't need cable, but you know, What if we're making the wrong decision? What if we're, you know, it's just one of those change is scary things. So I'm hoping we get the smart TV, get everything hooked up. Within a month, we can demonstrate that, wow, look at that. We haven't even turned on the cable in a month. Holy crap. You know what? We don't need it. That's going to be the clincher for us. So fingers crossed. We'll see. What's up next? Oh, John Cleese.
And now for something completely different.
That's right. It's time for something completely different. This is just stuff I don't have a category for yet. And technically, it's not even that different because I was just talking about TV and now I'm still talking about TV. I wrote down my initial note here that says, I love product placement. All right. And then it occurred to me that I did an entire episode, a whole rant somewhere 30 episodes back where I talk about how much I hate product placement. So I've got to balance the two. I love product placement. I hate product placement. I guess there are places where it becomes obtrusive, and that's what I ranted about before. But on the other hand, I don't mind when something is worked in, nor, I mean, you know, like when they're offering certain prizes on these reality shows and they make a big deal about the prizes because that's part of the advertising for the show. I got no problem with that. I got no problem with things that aren't, you know, where they're specifically altering the storyline so that they can make a big fuss about some product. When it becomes glaring, when the guy, like my example from the previous time I did this was American Pickers, when they're making such a big deal about where they're going to eat for lunch and they have to talk about Subway and how awesome it is and how it's not going to be, you know, whatever. That drives me crazy. When Heroes, when Claire, when her dad got her a new car, it was a Rogue, in fact. Oh, freaking Nissan Rogue. And they not only had to have her, oh my God, you got me a Rogue? Like anyone would say that. No. Oh my God, you got me a car. That's what, but no, oh my God, you got me a rogue. And they made this big deal about it. And then they had to mention it in the next episode. And then they had to have the car stolen so they could make a big deal about how awesome that rogue was and how she can't believe it got stolen. And oh, that was just made me grit my teeth. It was terrible. But on the other hand, the stuff that is more subtle, the stuff that is unobtrusive, the stuff that doesn't alter the storyline. The reason I was thinking of it is my wife was playing some puzzle game on some network website. I have no idea. But the puzzles all, when you unscramble the pictures are just screenshots from television shows. So it's basically you're doing a puzzle and the solution to the puzzle also happens to be free advertisement for them. See, I dig that. All right. I dig some product placement. I don't mind advertising because you know what advertising means? Advertising means I pay less for the product because if advertising can help pay for a product, then it costs me less. It costs the consumer less when it gets out to us. I mean, yeah, I know technically we pay for it in the cost of the product itself and blah, 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 blah. But you know what? I don't mind watching a couple commercials. I don't mind. I wish I could get a nice streaming service where I can get free stuff just because I watch commercials. I know that there's some of that out there, but you know, network TV, they offer all sorts of free stuff on network television, free television shows, and the only thing that you have to do is you have to watch their advertising. All right? How many advertisements do you get in 30 minutes of television programming? What, 7? 8? 12? More than that? I mean, you're getting typically 8 minutes worth of advertising out of your 30-minute broadcast, all right? So for me, you know, when I'm watching something online and they make me watch, over the course of a 30-minute show, they make me watch 2 commercials, I'm like, guys, you know what? If it'll make this cheaper, I'll watch a couple more. I don't mind. You know what? If you want to do a little bit of product placement to help defray this cost to the consumer, I'm good with that. That's all fine. I just wish we'd get a better model. I mean, I guess maybe they've gotten to the point where they're thinking that people won't, that, you know, that 1 or 2 commercials for your half hour program, that they're somehow thinking that that's the upper limit that people are willing to put up with on the internet. And I don't know, maybe they've tested it out and that really is the upper limit that we're willing to put up with. I'm willing to put up with more because I'm not going out and downloading stuff illegally, at least not that I know of. So I'm willing to put up with a little bit more, but maybe the people who have other venues are willing to just go steal stuff rather than sit through 3 minutes of commercials. You know what I mean? I don't know. Anyway, no point. Just thought it was interesting. Where are we? We're not even a half hour in yet. So, that will take me to a nerd culture report.
I thought this was Bowling for Weirdos.
No, Gonzo, it's not, but you're very, very close. I've actually got 2 nerd culture reports here, maybe even 3. I have to scroll down a little bit to find out. But the first one is, yeah, I saw Ender's Game. All right, you guys remember I had a big debate on whether or not I should watch Ender's Game. Do I support this extremist homophobe by supporting his product? And at the time, I was really torn about it and thought, you know what, maybe I really shouldn't and blah, blah, blah. Now, here's my cop-out answer is, hey, someone loaned it to us for free. Someone who had already bought it for themselves and they loved it. And my wife must have, it came up in conversation, who knows. And the woman says, well, then here, you take it. No, I insist. You get, so it's a friend who has loaned it to us and insisted that we watch it. So, look, it's an obligation to a friend. It's not like I even really wanted to see the damn thing. And 2, it's not like I paid any money for it. So, but the simple fact that I did watch it and the fact that I'm now talking about it does in some way help promote this. It's not, you know, I'm not innocent here. All right. I get that. But I saw Ender's Game and guess what? It's not a bad movie. I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed watching Ender's Game. And part of it is it's not perfect because it takes a really, really complex story and compresses it down to movie size, which I think they did almost the best they could. I can't come up with any obvious ways that they could have tweaked it. But it was just too compressed. I mean, in the real book, you know, Ender starts the whole process at 6 years old And then by the end of the movie, or by the end of the book, he's like 11 when the final battle occurs. All right, so it's like 5 years worth of Ender time to make all this happen. Well, it's a movie, so in a movie he's not going to physically age because they've only got one actor to play the role from beginning to end. I noticed that they had a couple of tricky camera angles so that he looks smaller in the beginning and he looks taller towards the end. They did some things to make him look a little more mature. And they certainly talked. There was like maybe two references where they talked about, oh, well, months and months of this. All right. So they gave, just in the voiceover, they gave the impression that there was huge amounts of time passing. But what you actually saw on the screen, you didn't really see it. So, I mean, on the screen, it really, for all you know, it could have been, yeah, 3 weeks beginning to end, for all we know. And that doesn't really convey the sense of what was going on here. Fortunately, look, they left out the whole bit with his siblings becoming king of the world by being really good bloggers. So thank God that part was taken out, because obviously reality has proven that concept completely erroneous. But they left in pretty much everything else. I mean, as far as the concepts that were going on here, the one thing that they didn't hit at the very end, and this is spoilers if you haven't seen this. Everything I've said so far is nothing big. Spoilers. At the very end in the book, they make it very clear that there was no reason to fight the bugs. They make it very clear that they had already made the decision that they would never attack us again. Once they recognized that we were intelligent, then they made the decision that you know, life is sacred, we're not going to do that. But so they weren't going to come after us, ever. In the movie, that's implied. I mean, we get the idea that, well, what are they waiting for? What are they doing? And so it's kind of implied that they're not going to attack us until we become the aggressors. But it doesn't really make it clear enough that, yeah, we're the evil invaders. We are really the bad guys in this. I mean, and yes, it does make it clear that we're the bad guys, but it doesn't really show how bad. The book made a much more powerful statement about humanity and aggression and, communication and just all sorts of stuff that went into it. About basic human rights, about, there's so much stuff. So the book did it way better. But here's the upshot. Do I recommend that you watch the movie? Meh, you don't need to. If you've read the book, and you absolutely should read the book. If you've read the book, then you don't need to watch the movie. If you want to watch the movie, yeah, it's pretty good. It's fun, especially if you've read the book, so you have some better context for what's going on. But I watched it with my whole family, and even the little kids really enjoyed it. And they got the point, or at least, the 10-year-old got the point, and I think the other one did too. But it's not something you have to watch. So when it comes down to, well, okay, but what about the whole point of supporting this guy who is this homophobic creep who, is spouting real idiocy, and his money goes towards supporting his brand of idiocy. And by supporting his book and his movie, you're giving him money. How can you do that? All I can tell you is I think Ender's Game, the book, and I haven't read any of the other books by him. I've never read anything by Card except Ender's Game. And I think Ender's Game, the book, is a really powerful and really important piece of science fiction literature. I think it is an absolute classic. And you know what? If you want to wait until he's dead to then go ahead and read the book and pass it along to your children and grandchildren, that's fine. All right. I understand that you don't want to give any money to this guy while he's alive because he'll do terrible things with it. That's fine by me. But I'm telling you, the book itself is really good and, in my opinion, really important. And I think it should be shared. I think we should continue to perpetuate this book as long as you do it with the understanding that anyone who wants to pursue his work in general, and support him, then you need to make sure that people understand, okay, look, you know he's a terrible person, but he did do this one glowing gem that we really need to pay attention to. It just, I don't know. That's how I feel on it. So, but then my other nerd culture report is about Harmontown, Dan Harmon's podcast I've been listening to. I don't want to dwell on this for too long, but anyone who started listening to Harmontown on my recommendation, I just got to give you fair warning that right around episode 65, a sucker is going to go south on you really, really fast. So just be prepared. My brother warned me. He said, oh, well, you know, after he gets his job back with Community, it just kind of, oh, the whole thing just turns. I'm like, oh, come on, you're nuts. You're seriously, how judgmental do you have to be? So I'm listening along, and sure enough, hey, I got my job back. And so I listen, and oh, that's awesome, and everyone had a great time. Then the next episode was still really good. And the next episode after that, also still really good. I don't know what my brother's talking about. He's an idiot. He doesn't know. And then it hits. And I'm like, oh, yeah, Dan Harmon's an asshole. I forgot. Shoot. That's too bad. And oh, look, he's going to pontificate at great length, and he's going to say things that are hypocritical, and he's going to contradict himself, and he's going to be really kind of a bully, and he's going to, and his friends even call him out on the show. They're like, dude, you're being a complete hypocrite. And he has to then bloviate for another 30 minutes to explain why he's not a hypocrite and why he's completely justified in all of this and why he's not really a bully, as he bullies people into admitting that he's not a bully. And then once he gets his job back, the whole point of Harmontown, he started doing this because he got fired from Community. Dan Harmon was the creator of Community, the head writer, showrunner for 3 seasons of brilliance. And then he gets fired, and then season 4 sucks. But while he's out for season 4, and he's got all this downtime, and he's depressed, and he hates himself, he puts together Harmontown, and he makes a podcast out of it, and then he takes it on tour, and all of this as some kind of therapy for himself. But he was humbled. The whole process humbled the man, and he was entertaining as all get out, and it was wonderful. And then he got his job back, and he turned into an asshole again. You're like, oh, that's why they fire him all the time. I get it. The man's a genius. He's brilliant. His writing is brilliant. I love Community. I love other things that I've seen him do. I love everything that's produced by Starburns Studios under his direction. I think his comedy is spectacular. But as a human being, he is a tough guy to live with. He just really, and it's the kind of thing that, and I'm doing the same thing my brother did, is that I'm tuning in for episodes, and if he's bringing out a good mix of guests and their talk is staying towards comedy and staying towards certain things, okay, good. Yeah, I'll listen all the way through. I'll enjoy the D&D session. That's great. The minute he starts getting up on his soapbox about something, and it's like, oh, yeah, once he's spent 5 minutes on a topic and you realize, okay, he's not going to stop till the show's over, I just fast forward until I find D&D. I listen to them play Dungeons and Dragons for 20 minutes. Show's over. We're out. I did this one time. He started pontificating literally 5 minutes into the show. So I fast forward. An hour and 45 minutes later, finally, almost 2 hours, and finally someone goes, okay, lightning round D&D, let's get this done. And they played like 7 minutes of D&D, and then the show was over. So I'm going to finish out the series, but I'm not going to listen to everything he says, because as much as I love Dan Harmon, and I really do, I mean, yeah. He's a tough guy. He's a tough guy to deal with, and God bless him, because his particular brand of assholery is what produces the genius that we really enjoy in Community and the other things that he produces. And you know, more power to him. But listening to Harmontown is just becoming a lot harder. So if you listened on my say so, I still recommend start from the beginning. Start right from the beginning of Harmontown. I recommend listening to it. Take your time, though. I kind of hurried through them because I was just in such a rush, because I wanted to get up to the current episodes and I wanted to stay current with him and all this. Now I'm not in such a hurry anymore, because it's like, oh, all right, you know what? I'm not so worried about what the future episodes are going to hold. I've gotten through the very best of it, I think. But, you know, I'm going to keep following. I'm going to keep listening to the D&D parts. I'll listen to the other stuff if he's not up on a soapbox. We'll see. But I still recommend listening to it. But if you want to get through, and then the minute you hear him say, hey, I got my job back, the minute you hear that one, if you want to turn it off and never listen again, I wouldn't blame you. I think that's a smart move. But up until that point, even the really, really awkward, horrible sections of that show are still totally worth it. There's all sorts of stuff where he just, it makes you cringe, but in an entertaining sort of way. It's a lot of fun. And then right around 60, 65, all right, now you're done. You can quit then. But one other thing that he did, this is going a little bit off topic, but for several episodes, he has been carrying what he calls the iHarmon. And, the iHarmon is a note-taking device that his assistant and also Dungeon Master came up with for him. And the thing is a brilliant idea if it wasn't so dorky. It's essentially a tiny notebook that he wears around his neck on a string, and it has an attached pencil. That way, anytime he needs to take notes, he never has to pull anything out of his pocket. He doesn't have to fumble with getting his phone unlocked and finding where the right app is for taking notes or any of that other stuff. Quite literally, he has note-taking right there on his neck, right there at hand level. All he has to do is put his hands to his chest, and boom, he's taking notes, and he's writing stuff down. And he loves it. Absolutely loves it. And it means he has to wear a notebook and a pencil on a string around his neck everywhere he goes, which is clearly a little socially awkward. But he does it, and he loves it. And as I'm hearing about it, I'm like, oh, that would be so cool. If I was willing to wear that around my neck, I would love having that. But I'm not willing to do that. But what I have been doing, and I was inspired by him, and I've started doing this again, is Pocket Mods. You guys use Pocket Mods? Have you seen them? Heard of them? Pocket Mod is, you go to pocketmod.com. Go look. Go to pocketmod.com and look at their site. It's simple, easy, and really, really useful. A Pocket Mod is simply a way to fold a single piece of paper so that you have a little 8-page booklet. Like you fold it up, pull out your scissors, and you make one little cut right there. And then once you've done that, you now have a really sturdy little booklet made out of a single sheet of paper, but it's got 8 pages in it, nice little note-taking size. And because it's just one single sheet of paper folded into eighths, it fits neatly into your pocket. And that's it. That's all there is to it. Now, on the Pocket Mod site, if you want to go in, and they have little customizable things, so with your 8 pages you have available to you, if you want to add in a calendar on it, or, you know, if you want to put in, a reference sheet that has, you know, standard conversion tables, or if you want to put in your own private notes, you know, that are always printed up, you can design how your Pocket Mod looks. Like, here's my note-taking sheet, here's my calendar sheet, here's my to-do list, and you can have it done like that. I don't do that. I have just a grid. I was using blank ones because they're simple to fold. You don't need to print anything at all if you don't want to. Just take a blank sheet of paper and fold it up. And so I was just using blank ones for a while, but now my newest one that I just made like yesterday, I used the Pocket Mod site, and I just had to put a small grid. It's a light blue grid that is printed up on all 8 pages. And it just gives me guidelines, for when I'm writing, and also gives me a grid so I've got like miniature graph paper just at the ready anytime I want it. Oh, how handy. And then all I do with this thing is it stays in my back pocket all the time. And anytime I have a thought, anytime I have something that I can't forget, I just pull it out of my pocket and write it down. It's that easy. Except instead of having a real notebook on me, which would be too bulky and would get all torn up, I just have a single folded sheet of paper. You would not believe how handy it is. It sounds so overly simplistic. You're like, well, duh, why don't I just carry a piece of paper? No. Go fold yourself a Pocket Mod. It is really cool. And so what I do, let me pull out the one that I have right here. Mine says haircuts. All right, cool. I got to do haircuts. And chiropractor. All right, I got to call them. And then I've got another list over here where it says turkey loaf, French fries, carrots, soda, new charger for the phone. All right. And so I just make lists of everything. And if I've got a shopping list, I write it down. If I've got to-do list, I just write it down. And I'll just make a list anywhere, and then I'll just cross things off as they either get bought or get done or get transferred over to something more permanent. And then as pages get filled up, I just keep flipping the thing around until I have clean pages. And eventually the whole thing is filled up. And what you wind up doing then is you fold a new Pocket Mod. If there's any like 2 or 3 little items still left in the old Pocket Mod, copy them over to the new one, throw the old one away. Done. Or if you want to save them forever and keep a little stack of Pocket Mods forever so that, you know, years from now you can go back and look at them like your to-do list memoirs, I guess you could do that. But I'm telling you, I feel like I'm boring the crap out of you with this thing, but I am so excited about my Pocket Mods. I have been using them for a while now, and I love them. I can't live without it. And you know what the biggest benefit for you guys is that I don't forget things that I want to do for the show. That's really the biggest one. If I'm out, I have actually several times now while I'm driving, I think, oh my God, I'm driving somewhere and I was having a discussion about history and how history is taught. And I'm discussing this with my son, who is in college and taking a history course. And as we're having this whole conversation about history and the teaching of history, I'm like, oh my God, I have to talk about that on the podcast. I have to. So I'm like, all of a sudden, you know, I'm in a panic and I'm pulling this thing out of my pocket. He's like, what? I'm like, here, take this. He's like, all right, what am I supposed to do with this? I said, all right, here, find a pen. Okay, good. Now write down lack of history. What? Just write it down. Okay, so he writes lack of history on my pocket, but I put it back in my pocket. I've done the same thing to my wife a couple of times. I'll hand her something and go here. Like the other day, we're in the car and Funky Cold Medina came on the radio. So I quick dick out my pocket money. I'm like, here, quick, write down Funky Cold Medina before I forget it. She's like, okay. She writes it down. She's like, why? Because I want them to be the sponsor of the next podcast. Seriously? Yes. I have to do it. Just don't let me forget. Okay. Cool. So I have constantly, and this is, like I say, this is a fresh pocket mod and the show is today. So I don't have any ideas listed on here, but pretty much, all of today's show, all of the stuff I'm talking about today, including the pocket mod itself, was all written down on my last pocket mod, and I transferred it all to the show notes yesterday and the day before, and then got to, once they transferred to the show notes, cross them off my list, pocket mod goes back in the pocket. I love this thing. So go to pocketmod.com. Honestly, play with it. Print one up. Try using them. They're awesome. The only reason I know about pocket mods, by the way, is because the last game writing challenge, game writing month, I guess it was, Stan introduced me to it. And showed me that one of the challenges was whatever game you wrote for the contest this year had to fit on a pocket mod, which I thought was brilliant. And so I tried it out and I didn't finish it because I never finished those things. But Stan did, and he had Pocketfuls of Adventure was his pocket mod game, and it's brilliant. We've actually, he posted up some stuff about it and asked for input on it and said, we should play this. And we still haven't done it yet, but I'm hoping, you know, after I do Zombie Cinema, after Jeff's got a game that he wants to do after Zombie Cinema, I would love to see Stan come back and do Pocketfuls of Adventure, because it's something I think we could run in, you know, 2, 3, 4 sessions, have a great time. And in fact, this is just a strange connection, but Pocketfuls of Adventure, in a lot of ways, reminds me of the TV show Rick and Morty. Rick and Morty do a lot of dimension hopping back and forth to different places, but in this really wild, campy, irreverent manner. And Pocket Mod has a similar feel of hopping back and forth in dimensions. Anyway, it's a connection. I'll have to go back and reread Pocketfuls of Adventure to see how well they connect. But anyway, cool. Get yourself a pocket mod. Do it. All right. What's left? Oh my God, I'm at 48 minutes? Oh, you know what? That means the Nerd Rage is going to have to wait, people. Again, Nerd Rage is always the last thing. It's going to get pushed out. Yeah, it's the one about history. It's history and our school system and how we teach history. But you're going to have to wait. I'll rage about it next week. In the meantime, we have to hurry to the Pod-O-Matic! All right. Hot dog, this is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? Will you send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums? I'll add it to my Pod-O-Matic list, because Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. And first off, a little Pod-O-Matic math. Ronster, the new guy, I told you, he just sent me some Pod-O-Matic entries. He sent me 6. And so I added them to the list, and I thought to myself, wow, yeah, how nice would it be if one of his came up right away in the first week, because he hasn't even, I mean, he's only listened to a few episodes. He's excited about getting involved. He sends me some Pod-O-Matics. I'm really excited about this. I thought, God, how cool would it be if one of his questions could just show up on the first show? And I'm like, but he's only got 6. So, you know, what are the chances, really? And then the minute my brain says, what are the chances? I'm like, all right, crap, get me out of the spreadsheet. Let's figure out what the chances are. So here's the deal. I have 265 total entries right this second on my Pod-O-Matic list. And Ronster has put in 6 of his own. So if I usually do what? 13 to 15 of them in the show. Let's call it 14. If I do 14 per show, that gives him actually a 28% chance of having one of his show up this week. All right, that's not bad. That's not bad. All right, what about two shows? So this week and next week. Hey, by the end of next week, he's got a solid 50-50 shot. All right. And then by the end of a month, four shows total, he's up to 75% chance that he's going to hear one of his if I don't get any new entries to add to the mix and change the numbers and all that. But by the end of a month, he's 75% likely that he's going to hear one of his entries read. I'm like, all right, that's pretty cool. So I'm like, all right, what about if we have some more entries? So I go look at Talvin. Talvin has 9 entries, all right? He's at 9 left. He actually used to have a lot more. Talvin's got 9 entries left on the list, just 3 more than Ron. And with that extra 3, his chances jump for just this week, from 28% jumps up to 40% chance that we're going to hear something from Talvin this week, all right? By next week, that jumps up to 2 out of 3, and within a month, 90% chance that we're going to hear something from Talvin. Cool. All right, Billy Bob, I'm going to keep going. Sorry, you got to put up with it. It's my show. Billy Bob only has 16 left on the list, which means at 16 entries out of 265, 16 entries means he's got a 60% chance that one of his is going to show up this week, at least one of his. 85% by next week, and within a month, 98% certainty that we're hearing from Billy Bob at least once. All right, cool. And before I move on, obviously, the final question to ask, well, at least it's the question that Zimnipod is asking. Zimny says, well, what about me? What about me? I have more entries than anybody. All right, Zim, here's the deal. Zimnipod has 127 of our 265 entries, almost half, which means that there is a 1 in 13,000 chance that you won't hear anything from Zimny tonight. 1 in 13,000, so 99.9 and then some chance that he's going to have an entry read tonight. Probably several. Oh, well, what about within a month? All right. If we go all the way out to a month, then the chances of not hearing from Zimnipot in a month, 1 in 6.5 quintillion. All right. That's a number that you can keep, Zim. 6.5 quintillion. That means you are better off buying a Powerball ticket than betting against Zimnipot. In fact, you're probably more likely to win the Powerball 2 weeks in a row than you are to not hear from Zimnipot in a month. All right. That's how dedicated that man is to this show. That's impressive. But enough of my number nerditry. Seriously, R2 has been staring at me with the number 2 showing for ages here. And the number 2 comes from a Mr. Serious Paul. Mr. Serious Paul says, do you play cell phone games? Well, of course I do, because I own cell phones. That's just how the world works. Right now I play a game called Risked, which is a knockoff version of Risk, which is, it's actually not that, it's not a great version of it, because it actually gives a little few extra armies than the real game does, and has an extra connection between South America and Australia, and it winds up being pretty easy. And I play it almost obsessively. When I've got some free time, I will play it for like 15 minutes. I'll wind up cranking out 3 games in 15 minutes because it can go that fast. And I've figured out the tricks that the AI in it is pretty stupid, even on the hardest level. And so I play that one. But before that, you know, I always have one game on the cell phone that I am obsessed with. Before this, it was a tower defense game. Before that, it was Hold'em Poker. Before that, I pick one game and I will literally, for 6 months, it will be the only thing I play on my phone when I have free time for phone games. And I don't play, and this is not to say that I play hours in a day, but I'll put in a few minutes every day on whatever my game is. And then, eventually I'll get to the limit on it and go, okay, that's enough of that one. Let's go find something new. I play some cell phone games. Forgot I have to hit the button before R2 rolls. Number 15. This is from Billy Bob. See, 60% chance. Now he's in. 100%. Billy Bob says, ever had a teacher lie to you? Oh, man. Have I ever had a teacher lie to me? Like, obvious lie. I have. I can think of a couple off the top of my head. When I was in second grade, Mrs. Pearl was my second grade teacher, and Mrs. Pearl was a very old woman at that time, by my estimation of teachers' ages. No, Mrs. Pearl was my kindergarten teacher. Who was my second grade teacher, who was also really old? Oh, I can't remember my second grade teacher's name. But anyway, whoever my second grade teacher was, who was not Mrs. Pearl, I remember we were talking about some war in our social studies class, and the teacher told us that one of the things to be proud of with the United States of America is that we had never lost a war. And I remember completely and totally believing that at the time. I integrated that into my psyche. I was aware that America, one, in addition to being righteous and noble, land of the free, home of the brave, had never lost a war either, which means we are top dog, we kick ass. I just knew that as a fact because my teacher told me so. All right, now, let me just note that I was in second grade in 1977, okay? So completely forget that we got our asses kicked by Canada in the War of 1812. All right, let's leave that one aside. We literally had just gotten out of Vietnam. Like, we had just, like moments before I walked into second grade, we had just left Vietnam. And this woman had the gall to tell a bunch of kids that the United States had never, ever lost a war. How do you, what kind of mental gyrations were we going through at that point? Was that, did we call that one a tie? I don't, and later when I realized that I figured out the Vietnam thing, fairly soon. I mean, it wasn't that year, but it was while I was in grade school. And then the War of 1812, I probably figured out in junior high or so when I finally learned about the War of 1812. Which, by the way, was a shock. I don't know if maybe I was blocking it out or they just never taught the whole facts. But when I finally figured out that we lost the War of 1812, it wasn't like that was the first time I'd ever heard of the war. The war had been taught to me many, many times. And yet somehow, never once did I gain from my teachers that we had lost that war. I get that we modify how we teach stuff to kids because, you know, little kids aren't ready for all the nuances of politics and international relations and all this. They just need the overview, the basics, the, you know, talk to me like I'm a 5-year-old, literally. Okay, I get that. But still, to get, you know, all the way up to junior high or high school or whatever I was and not realize that we lost the War of 1812, even though it had been taught to me more than once, but they never mentioned that we lost, I was a little upset by that. Alright, but the other one, the other lie, and this one really bugs me, and I don't know why, and I knew it was a lie when it happened, but my 7th grade or 8th grade English teacher, Mr. Gagnon, who was kind of a leftover hippie, and he was otherwise pretty darn cool as a teacher, or seemed to be at the time. But one of the things he talked about, and he did a big bit, like his class was where I first learned about all sorts of stuff about advertising and subliminal advertising and product placement and tricks that they use, and he made it really fascinating. So it was where I first fell in love with advertising in general as a concept. And so I liked Gagnon and I liked his class, and yet at one point he talked about when it was, in fact, when we were talking about advertising, he talks about marketing it to people, and he's talking about, you know, tricks that they market stuff to us that people don't even need. And he said, for example, deodorant. Okay, please explain. And we had several kids in the class who protested that and said, what do you mean we don't need deodorant? You don't want to stink, do you? Okay. And he's explaining that, yeah, deodorant is just masking the smell. Deodorant just covers it up. It's not, he says, you know, as long as you keep yourself clean, there's nothing to worry about. As long as you shower, well, yeah, but what happens if I go to gym class? Well, okay, then you shower after gym class. If you need a refresher in the middle of the day, you know, just go wash yourself off quick. You're going to be fine. You don't need deodorant. Good Lord. The human body doesn't stink that much. Okay, first off, he's wrong. The human body does stink that much, and we as a modern society have decided that that's rather unpleasant. But more than that, he then said, and they dare to call these things antiperspirants? Antiperspirants, that's just, there's not a product out there that can make you not sweat. So he was telling us that antiperspirants are a lie because antiperspirant means no more sweating. It means it will block your sweat. And that's obviously impossible. They can't make you not sweat. Yeah, you know what? They can. That's exactly what they do. That's why in my house, I don't buy for myself or for my kids, I don't buy deodorant because deodorant is, you know what? Put a deodorant on a teenage boy, all right? And you know what happens is by the end of the day, he stinks like body odor with a hint of Axe, okay? That's all you get, All right. What he needs is an antiperspirant so that he doesn't sweat all day. That's how you keep him from stinking. All right. And trust me, I've got two of them that have been through it and a third one who's just starting to stink. So I know where I'm talking about, where I'm coming from. So the idea that Gagnon would tell us that A, people don't stink that bad if you just take a shower, and B, there's no such thing as an antiperspirant. He was just lying to us. And the worst part is he was doing it to junior high kids. What kind of monster tells junior high kids to not wear deodorant? What was he thinking? Oh my God. It was just horrifying. I'm not even going to go that far. But anyway, it was a lie, and I knew he was lying. I wasn't sure about the antiperspirant part, but I knew that the stinking part, he was really off. People stink. I've known people on a regular basis who just don't use apparently don't believe in deodorant. They don't use deodorant. They don't forget about it. Or they use deodorant and not antiperspirant. Maybe that's their problem. But I've known people who stink. Then it's not pleasant. There's been times when you can walk into a room and go, oh, wow, who the hell was in here? I mean, like I just got in the elevator. I got on the elevator at work the other day, and, I mean, the door's open. There is nobody there. And I get in, and the elevator reeks of body odor. I'm like, who the hell is so stinky that they can stand in an elevator by themselves, and when they leave, this is what's left? Oh, creepy. Enough of this. Number 21 from, obviously, Zimney Pot, because Zim is going to be in every show forever. And Zim says, how fast can you say the alphabet backwards? ZYXWBUTSRQPONMLKJIHDFEDCBA. About that fast. Number 63. This one is Talvin. All right. Talvin says, we've seen the growth of virtual tabletop applications such as Roll20 and applications such as HeroLab to aid in character creation and tracking. What do you see as the next frontier for technology aids to tabletop RPGs? I don't know. I'm not good at predicting where trends are going to go. I can see what they're doing right this moment, and I can see that it's getting to the point where we're going to be able to pull up, like for Pathfinder, right? D&D Pathfinder. We're getting to the point where we're going to be able to pull up a creature type, and even if it's a creature that, normally isn't a playable race, if we need to add some levels to it, that we'll have some easy, quick buttons, methods to just stat up I need a beholder who also has, five levels of sorcerer. Click, 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 and it'll stat that up for you, give you all your mods, give you all your information, and then let you go and customize quickly. And then not only that, as my brother was just talking about, the ability to, you have the app open, and when you hit the, okay, I need those goblins, they're all ready for you. Their stats just come up. Everything's there already for you. Do whatever you need to do with them. I see that stuff, but we're already doing that. I don't know where the next step goes, because what I've always thought of when I think of technology for tabletop gaming, every time in the past I've tried to look ahead, it always looks like, oh God, they're going to take everything away from us. It's no longer going to be tabletop role playing. It's going to be just a video game. We're just playing it slightly differently. And it turns out to never be that. What comes up winds up being, no, it's tabletop role-playing. It's just instead of a book, I now have it on an electronic device. Instead of my dice, I can just use this app here instead of whatever. So I don't know for sure, and I wish I had a better answer than that, but I'm not good at this futurism stuff, the futurism. Number 53. This is from Kyle. Kyle says, Frozen, am I right? Am I right? Oh, dude, you are so right. Frozen is spectacular. When I talk about Disney princesses, this is the way Disney princesses, this is the way they should have been done all along. There is a level of female empowerment in this story that is wonderful. It sets up the classic love at first, spoilers, sets up the classic love at first sight trope right at the very beginning, and then over the first act of the story, craps all over it and says, love at first sight, what are you, an idiot? What are you, stupid? Really? Love, come on, you know better than that. You can put all your faith in some guy you just met? What's wrong with you? Wonderful. And at the end, that even after we find her true love, all right, it's okay, love at first sight obviously didn't pan out, but then she finds the guy that is obviously her true love. All right, obviously. And the movie ends with you can break the curse by the power of true love, and true love turns out to be the love of family, the love between sisters. Sweet! How awesome was that? That was amazing. All right, that was beautiful and wonderful, and it didn't discount the true love of her new romance. He's still there, and there's still a thing, and it still works, and all of that. But that's not the important part. The important part was her sister. That was what this whole tale was about, and it was wonderful. It was really, really wonderful. And the songs were good. And while I would like to see Disney moving away from musicals when they do these princess stories, I understand it's part of their marketing. Really, I mean, honestly, the only weak part of that movie, in my opinion, was the trolls. The trolls were completely and totally unnecessary, and I could go on forever about how you could have rewritten that whole thing to do away with the trolls, and you wouldn't have lost a single thing from that movie, and you would have gotten rid of this huge distraction, and honestly, a big musical dance number for the trolls just because they needed another musical number in there? I don't get it. All right. That part I didn't care for. The whole rest of the movie, absolutely wonderful. No complaints at all. Yeah. Number 87 is from Zimny. Zim says, would you rather be able to read minds, fly, or become a dragon? Ooh. You know what? This will change day to day, but I am going to go with fly. And here's why. Because I don't think I want to know what other people are thinking. Read minds is one of those that sounds like it's going to be really cool, and sounds like it, and certainly you could use your mind reading abilities for fun and profit, but I feel like it would disconnect me from people. I would get to the point where, you know, even if I decide this is hurting me, I don't need to be seeing into other people's thoughts. This is just bad. I'm better off without it. And then I would stop doing it. But then the temptation to just peek would be so strong, and you'd wind up doing it. And then you go, oh God, why did I do that? I didn't want to know that. Why? Now I've got this to worry about. Now I think reading minds would wind up being way more pain than it is worth. And I think it would wind up disconnecting me from people ultimately. So I can't read minds. Become a dragon. Oh, wait. Hold on. I read this question and assumed you meant become a dragon permanently. In which case, no, I don't want to be a dragon permanently. I think it would be really cool to be a dragon temporarily. Have the ability to be a were-dragon. Turn into a dragon. As long as I can come back to me whenever I need to, that would be way better. All right. Although, in this land of constant surveillance and cell phones, and everyone has a camera on them at all times and everything else that's going on, being either a dragon or having the ability to fly, either one of those, you're going to get caught on film. And you're going to get caught on film really, really fast. And the minute people know that there's a flying person, or the minute people know that there's a dragon, they're going to find you. Absolutely. Period. They will find you. There's no way they can't find you. So, all of these have real downsides in today's real modern world. The one that would be most fun, though, oh, it would be flying. I would love to be able to fly. That'd be great. Oh, yeah. Number 99. This is Zimny again. You just won an old arcade cabinet with a game of your choice. Which one is it? It's Tempest. It's Tempest. It's always Tempest. Tempest was the greatest game ever to be in an arcade. All right. It's maybe not be the greatest game ever, but in the arcades, in the old cabinet style games like you're talking about, Tempest was the bomb. Tempest was amazing. And here's the thing about Tempest is Tempest was played with a wheel. Tempest was played with that little spinny wheel. And And it was not a spinny wheel like the little paddle wheel that you got with the original Atari, because the paddle wheel stopped. The paddle wheel had a limited range of motion. You could flip it all the way around one time, and then it stopped. No, this was a real wheel that could go around forever. And when you spun your wheel around forever, your guy on the screen went around and around and around forever. That's the way it was meant to be. Tempest was amazing. And there, because of that wheel, because of that particular control, I have never, since the last time I played Tempest in an arcade in the original cabinet, I have never had the same experience of Tempest in any other setting. It's never the same. It never feels right. Right, and the times that I see a Tempest machine, I will play it. Anytime I've seen one over the last 20 years, I play it. And there's not a lot of them around. Plus, it's also, for a while, part of the problem was the vector graphics. And you couldn't replicate the vector graphics really well on most home systems. Although now, with modern computing, you can replicate the look and feel of it really easy on the screen. So that part's not a problem. The problem is the wheel. And while it's all right when I try and do it with the mouse or with the keyboard or even with my joystick or control pad or whatever, it's all right, but it's not Tempest. And any other game, any other cabinet game, I can get just as well by having it emulated onto my PC, and I am just fine. But Tempest can't be duplicated, and I love Tempest. My favorite game. Number 28. Oh, hey, it's Jeff Hawes. Jeff says, name a designer or company outside of Paizo that has impressed you. Evil Hat Games. Evil Hat Games, Fred Hicks. This is good stuff. I like Fate. And I've always loved Fate. I've always wished I could play it. I've just heard recently, as we've been talking about it, that it's a little cumbersome, a little problematic, but that there's the core Fate core rules that are available online, and so I've been looking at those, and then they said core light or whatever the light version is, so it's easier to read. But apparently the new streamlined version of Fate makes it a lot simpler. You get, from what I've been told, 5 aspects instead of 10, and I've always loved the idea of Fate. I've read all sorts of Fate stuff, and I'm getting back into it now that I've downloaded all the materials. I've got the website bookmarked, and I'm going through it all. I just like Fate, and I wish I could have a chance to play it to find out if I really like Fate or if I just like the idea of Fate. You know what I mean? But either way, it's impressive stuff. So there's got to be others. There's got to be lots of others, because I have a whole string of indie games on my computer and on my shelf that some of them I've played, some of them I've just only wished I could play. There are lots of stuff that impressed me, but Fate and Evil Hat are the first things that jumped to my mind. Excellent. Number 35. This is Kyle again. He-Man versus Thundar. Assume a tag team cage match, and they are paired up with Man-at-Arms and Ookla, respectively. No weapons. Thundar. I was never a huge fan of He-Man. I've not watched the shows much at all, so I'm not real familiar, but I watched almost every episode of Thundar, if not every episode of Thundar, with his best friends, Princess Ariel and Ookla the Mock. And I loved Thundar. I know it's cheesy and dumb, and if I were to go back and watch an episode now, I'm sure I would be amazed at the utter sheer stupidity of it. I believe that, but I haven't seen it since I was a little kid. It can remain pristine in my head, and it's wonderful. I love Thundar. I have no idea about their abilities. I can't make a realistic comparison between the two in an actual combat, so I'm just going to say Thundar, because Thundar deserves to win, because Thundar is so much cooler. Plus, he's got Ookla, who is a Mock. Not Man-at-Arms. No, Man-at-Arms is lame. All right, Ookla the Mock. Number 37. Kyle, how much did you pay for the shoes you're wearing, and how old are they? I probably paid about $40 for them, and I got them, I don't know, sometime before Christmas. So I've had them 8 months, 9, something like that. Maybe they were a Christmas present. I don't remember. But I probably paid $35 to $40 for them. That's about right. And that's typical for me. Look, I pay about $35, $40 for a pair of shoes. I wear it until Even Yancey is embarrassed that I'm wearing such shoddy shoes to work. And then once they finally get holes in them, or they start falling apart, or they're just clearly just too worn out to do anything else, then I go buy another one that looks pretty much just like them. So I only really have one good pair of shoes, one pair of tennis shoes, and one pair of sandals at any given time. That's all I ever need. Excellent. Number 39. This one is from Mr. Zimney again. Would you rather live your life in the sky or underwater? Do I have to make a choice? Because I love them both. I think the flying is more interesting. We already talked about that in the last one of the last questions. But there's more cool stuff to see underwater. And I've always loved both. I have had dreams over the years of flying, which is spectacular. And I've had dreams of being able to swim really fast and breathe underwater, which is also unbelievably cool. If I have to choose just one, I'm going to go within the air. I'm going to live my life in the air if I have to. It depends. Again, can I return to land when I need to? Because, you know, if I'm living underwater, that limits my access to the internet and fire and all sorts of stuff. Whereas up in the air, I guess I could do those things as long as I had wireless. Maybe. All right, now I've confused myself. I don't know. Let's say in the air. Number 32. Zimnipot says, what common sci-fi trope would you like to see a fantasy version of? All right, last week we got the what fantasy trope would you like a sci-fi version of. This is the reverse of that. This is the exact same answer as before. I think they overlap so much that there's not really... I don't think there's a whole lot of difference between fantasy and sci-fi when it comes to the tropes that they use. Salvation had the suggestion of blood magic. That blood magic is not something that very often comes up in science fiction, where you actually have devices, machinery, abilities that are powered literally by blood that needs to be spilled. But other than that, and that's not even a favorite trope of mine, but that was the only good example we could come up with that we saw was a fantasy trope that had not really been done really well in sci-fi at this point. Other than that, I got nothing on this one, dude. I think we've answered this one. Okay, last one, number 78. Oh, it's from this is a good one for a last one, too. F. Mary Kill, Ronald McDonald, Grimace, the Hamburglar. F. Mary Kill, the rules are simple. I am given three choices, and then I have to choose one of them for the F, one of them that I'm going to have wild, passionate sex with. One that I will marry and live with for the rest of my life with no possibility of divorce, and then one that I will just straight up kill. So of Ronald McDonald, Grimace, and the Hamburglar. This one's easy. Grimace to marry, because Grimace is just so affable, and I've always liked Grimace as a character. I don't know why. I've always been very fond of Grimace. I will marry Grimace and live with him for the rest of my life. The Hamburglar, I can't trust the Hamburglar as far as I can throw him. Obviously, he has burglar right in his name. But I think that would translate into a really hot, passionate night of loving. So to quote, I don't even remember where I heard it from, but to quote somebody, he could robble my knobble. That's too much. That's too much. Hamburglar for the F, that would leave Ronald McDonald just to kill, which is fine by me. That's not going to hurt me at all. So that just leaves us with a recap.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2014 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week, Weezer's In the Garage, and that was it. All right. All of the songs I use are available on iTunes. Check them out. Buy them. Enjoy them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. If you feel like doing something nice for this podcast, you head on over to iTunes. You write me a nice review. Or check out my Facebook page at facebook.com/nerdprideradio. Stop at the Facebook page. Click like. It's just 9 seconds out of your day. And you know what? Maybe I'll even start updating that page again. we'll see. Don't forget to check out the free games I have available on my free games page. Instant Game, Animal Ball Melee, Sandbox Hill, 2/3 of a dozen others, all free, all awesome, all the time. If you want to contact me, you can always email me at mike@nerdprideradio.com, and I promise I will actually respond to you. But to be totally honest, the very best way to talk to me is to come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. Sign up just like Ron did. Send me a message. We'll hang out. We'll be best friends. We'll have fun. Number 12 is from Lucy. Awesome. Lucy says, in Pathfinder, two traits can only be possessed by gnomes. The animal friend trait and the rapscallion trait. Why do you think only gnomes can have these traits? And if I ever encountered a humanoid who appears to have both of these traits, is this sufficient evidence to conclude that he or she is a gnome? Logic nerd. Okay. Someone else just called her a logic nerd today. All right. First part of the question. Animal friend and rapscallion as traits that can only be possessed by gnomes. There are actually many traits that only can be, possessed if you are of a certain race, in the game. And thus, these two are just traits that they came up with that are appropriate for gnomes. That doesn't mean that they wouldn't ever be appropriate for other races, but it does mean that they are particularly appropriate for gnomes, and these are their racial traits. Now, if you come up with someone else who appears to have both of these traits, is that sufficient evidence to conclude that he or she is a gnome? No, for two reasons. One, because there is an adopted trait, and if you are adopted, you could say that you were adopted by gnomes. And therefore, that trait allows you, by saying you're adopted, to just pick up the gnome trait. You can pick up any racial trait you want simply by saying your character was raised by those people. That's all you need to do. So you could have traits that you don't necessarily qualify for, but just by taking another trait to get around it. It's just a freebie. And also, there are multiple traits out there that give the exact same benefit, they just go by different names. All right. So there are traits out there that give you a +1 or +2. I can't remember what it is. The traits that give you a +2 to your initiative score. All right. And, there's, I think, two of them that I found that do that. And for whatever reason, my character, was a half orc, and one of the traits would have fit me, but I, as a half-orc, I didn't qualify for it because it was a racial trait that gave a +2 to initiative, so I couldn't take that one. And then the other one gave the exact same +2 to initiative, and I did qualify for the trait, but the trait itself was a descriptor that didn't fit my personality. So technically, I couldn't really take either one of those traits, even though one of them fit, just wasn't the right race, and the other one didn't really fit me, but would have given the same bonus. And so, with the game master's permission, I just created a new trait that was similar, but that I could apply to myself. And I think I basically called myself ADHD and used it to give me a +2 initiative, and we called it good. So really, if you come across someone who has both animal friend and rapscallion as traits, hey, they could be adopted and just using a similar trait that you think looks like one of those traits. Unless you've met them in game and they allow you to look at their character sheet and you see both of them, you can't take two adopted traits by the rules that I know of. But I don't think that would be sufficient. I still don't think, the way the rules can be manipulated in these games, I wouldn't count on it. I mean, I wouldn't stake my life on the fact that someone who has animal friend and rapscallion, I wouldn't stake my life on the fact that they're a gnome. But I would put money on it. Well, you know what? It depends on what other categories they fall into. Because if they are specifically racial traits, when you take your traits, you can only take one trait from each type of category. So if you're taking it as a racial trait, you can only take a racial trait once, or you can only take one racial trait. So you couldn't take both gnomish traits, because you can't have two racial traits on there. Unless one of them also qualifies under another, like if rapscallion, in addition to being a racial trait, also qualifies as a social, then I suppose you could take both of them. So I don't know. I'd have to look up the rules, and I'm not going to do that right now. But no, I don't believe it is sufficient to make that conclusion. But I've been wrong before.